great to chat, brother. What's up?
What's going on, Scotty? How are you?
I'm good. I have a job. Dave Dombrowski doesn't. So, look, I frame it this way. If you look at it strictly as a world championship trumps all, it's impossible to argue that Dave Dombrowski's tenure in Boston was successful. If you frame it as a conversation about where baseball is and where baseball is going, Dave Dombrowski did a lot of bad things to secure the ultimate good, said world championship. And that's what cost him here, isn't it?
That's correct. A GM today, I think everybody understands that it's really about process. It's about a cumulative effect of decisions, of vision over the long term. The people who are surprised that Dombrowski got fired look at it and go, but he won a World Series last year. What does that mean for his ability to put together a team in 2020 or 2021 or 2019, or how competent he is when signing guys to long-term deals? It means nothing. And to give Red Sox ownership credit, and I think they deserve a lot of heat, frankly, for a lot of the way their own management choices have gone, at least they realize that. At least they're not sticking with somebody out of some sense of obligation to the past. You don't keep a 200 hitter around unless he's making so much money that you just can't justify it. You know, why would a GM be any different?
I look at Dombrowski's track record. I mean, this is somebody for whom there's affinity here in Canada because he was with the Expos so far back. He is a world champion from his days with the Florida Marlins. His moves with the Detroit Tigers got them to a World Series, although they did not win it. And then his work with the Red Sox secures a world championship. So there is a long track record of success here, Evan. But I think, aside from the whole bullpen stuff, and can this guy actually build a bullpen, that's more a minor detail. Dombrowski's MO has been to go in after a general manager or a front office that has accrued significant prospect capital, divest the organization of said prospect capital to bring in now guys and then pay them a whole truckload of money. And that just, in the process world, in the win but be efficient while doing it world, doesn't work anymore, does it?
No, his style is basically see hole, fill hole. And if you are an organization at a point where all you really want to do, like Mike Ilitch wanted to do, the late owner of the Tigers wanted to do in Detroit, is win, that works. But if you want to sustain something over the long term, there's no good justification for the Red Sox to have won three division titles and then no longer be in the playoffs. What GMs can, we know the playoffs can be something of a crapshoot. We can have that argument another day if people want to have it. But the regular season is what you, as a GM, really control. You know, you control postseason roster, all that stuff. But that's where you kind of prove over time what you're good at building or not good at building. You go back to 2015 when Dombrowski got hired, and the amount of resources, both in talent and money, that was available to him, and now they're in a position where they're going to miss the playoffs? I get they won a World Series, but if you're ever going to ascribe a 119-win season to luck, that's pretty darn close to it. Because if they don't win last year, you're not looking back on Dombrowski's tenure and going, wow, that was genius. You go, he just burned through everything he had and didn't leave his eventual successor with as much to work with as should have been the case.
With Evan Drellick of the Business of Baseball covering the New York media for The Athletic, we're talking the Boston Red Sox. He has a long history on the Red Sox beat. It's Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
How would you expect a new president to come in, and what would you expect him to do differently, I guess?
Well, the history of Red Sox ownership has been to hire stars. They wanted Billy Beane before they hired Theo Epstein. Ben Charrington kind of broke that mold. They promoted from inside. Then when ownership got fed up with Ben, They went for a name that John Henry had some familiarity with, and that was Dombrowski. You break up with a girlfriend or a boyfriend, what do? Do you then go to somebody identical, or do you go to somebody very different from what you were just with? I think it could be the case that they will realize that Dombrowski represented a certain style, and now they should go the other way. You know, they've promoted three people internally who are perfectly capable. And the thing that held it all together with Dombrowski there was that there was a strong baseball operations group that was in place for 15 years. And then Dombrowski gets dropped on top of them. They managed to make it work. But you would hope that ownership would kind of have an appreciation for continuity and what was actually functional in the Dombrowski time.
Is there something to, Evan, the notion that Dombrowski's approach could be romanticized? Because he certainly doesn't fit today's mold. He is a bit of a gunslinger. I mean, I think that's fair to say. And we live in this stodgy world of corporatism, analytics, overshifting, three true outcomes, strikeouts, walks, home runs, poor middle relief, 3.5 hour games. Like, I find myself in agreement with you on it, almost everything you're saying, or pretty much everything you're saying, and yet there is an appeal to the likes of Dombrowski for me because he represents a type of game that, in certain ways, I miss.
That's a really good question, and I think you're right because it's a head and the heart issue, and the appeal of something that is just different. You know, the Mets getting Stroman. What the hell are the Mets doing? And yet, the fact that the Mets were competing made it interesting. Even if you know in the long run this might not be the most logical move for them, there is an excitement that produced. There is an excitement about going out and getting big players and big names the way that Dombrowski did it. And there's probably room, looking at a lot of front offices in baseball, to act a little more liberally and a little bit more like Dombrowski, to not make efficiency and cost savings. And because in a tiny way, if I sit here and say, well, Dombrowski's not a modern GM, what does that mean to be a modern GM? And that is a whole other really messy can of worms. But even if you take away a little bit of that stylistic stuff, how he handled people and kind of what tools you need to be positioned. And realistically, an ownership group is going to care if they over time have to chase their mistakes with money, which is what the Red Sox are basically doing. You know, on an operational basis in 2018, operational. So, you know, when John Henry sells this team, this isn't going to matter. But the Red Sox lost money. That does not include Nesson, their TV station, which they own. It does not include the huge amount of money they'll make if they ever sell. So it's a little bit of dodgy accounting. But clearly the business model wasn't working. So you can't ignore it, but I'm with you. I feel what you're saying.
With Evan Drellick of The Athletic on the Dombrowski firing in Boston, I don't know if you can answer this question well, setting the current injury aside, but I'm asking you to if you can. On the surface, all things being equal, was the 5-year, $145 million extension for Chris Sale, which takes effect next season, a mistake?
You know, my gut is no. And the reason is that unless they had something in the medical history that told them there was a problem, you know, you can look at a guy and go, well, he's skinny, he's not going to hold up, and maybe that's what's really going on here. But everything I had gotten in my own reporting after last year was that he was healthy. And then you look at where he ranks and what he does statistically, it's a modern-day Randy Johnson when he's right. And this is a pretty strong drop-off here at an age where I guess you could say you expect it, but I didn't. I think it's a little too soon to see someone transform that way. So being that it wasn't $200 million, you know, this wasn't David Price money. It's the kind of contract that seems relatively reasonable, particularly for someone who's so damn good. So, you know, of all these, the one I go, should have given the money to Charlie Morton. Why the guy who's had two Tommy Johns would you give a four-year deal to when you have a guy like Morton sitting out there? And it's never the one deal in isolation. Dombrowski had to fight to get the Sale deal, and that soured his relationship with ownership some. That's something I put in a report yesterday. The way that Dombrowski went about securing that deal for Sale, because Dombrowski firmly believed the Red Sox would be they needed that big arm. That style of building a roster, though, that's also going out of play. I mean, great starting pitchers are great and always desirable, but the formula is not what it was in the 70s and 80s and 90s and even the early 2000s as Dombrowski kind of made his name.
With Evan Drellick, help me understand the Mookie Betts situation. Is there something more there between Betts and the organization, or Betts and the microscope that is Boston, or is it strictly this sense that they have to trade him this offseason before he hits free agency in 2020 because of Eovaldi, Price, Sale? They've got the Bogaerts extension that will kick in. They have spent so much money that it will be virtually impossible to field an entire roster keeping Betts and staying under the luxury tax. Is it strictly money, or is there more there?
No, that's correct. Betts has made clear at every single juncture possible that he's going to go for top dollar, that he's going to test the market, you know, whether that's arbitration, whether that's marketing, whatever it might be. There's been no mixed signals from where Mookie Betts and Mookie Betts' camp want to go. They want to get the highest bid possible, and the Red Sox and Dombrowski landlock themselves. You know, they could pay Betts. Remember, the luxury tax is not supposed to operate as a cap, but when you're at that third tier, and the Red Sox are the only team, I believe, pushing it right now, that is effectively where it goes, because the penalties are pretty severe if you go over it. So if they think they can sign J.D. Martinez to another deal, and it also becomes a question of what contracts could they move. You know, could you move David Price's deal? Could you move an Eovaldi if he looked healthy? And all some of the other money they've got wrapped up. You know, there are ways to keep Mookie Betts, but they're not going to sign him ahead of free agency unless they really, really pay him.
And what does really, really pay him mean? Is he looking for Harper? Is he looking for north of Harper? Obviously south of Trout, because that's the bellwether. Like, where does he fit in all of that?
This is just a guess, but given that he's performed close to Trout a couple times, I would think that the number they would start out with would be somewhere between Trout and Harper. I think to try to get Trout money would be a too much, because he hasn't been, you haven't seen that same year-to-year consistency, but how do you not, with a player of that talent, at least go for $300+ million for kind of the standard for the highest level of elite player, maybe aside from Mike Trout?